VOA One The Hits. Billboard.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, U.S. President Joe Biden signed 10 executive orders Thursday as part of his plan to fight the coronavirus. Biden will establish a COVID-19 testing board to increase testing, deal with supply shortages, establish rules for international travelers, and direct resources to hard-hit minority communities. The new president has promised to take more forceful measures to contain the virus than the Donald Trump administration. He faces major barriers, with the virus actively spreading in most states. Vaccinations have been slow in many places. It is also unclear whether congressional Republicans will help him pass a $1.9 trillion economic relief and COVID response bill. "We need to ask average Americans to do their part," said Jeff Zients, the White House official directing the national response. Defeating the virus requires a coordinated nationwide effort. Officials in the Biden administration say they were delayed by a lack of cooperation from the Trump administration during the change in presidency. They say they do not have a complete understanding of past actions on vaccine distribution. And they face accusations from states that say they are not getting enough vaccine, even as they are being asked to vaccinate more people. Dr. Anthony Fauci is Biden's top medical advisor on COVID-19. He announced renewed U.S. support for the World Health Organization after the Trump administration left the United Nations Health Agency. Fauci said early Thursday that the U.S. will join the WHO's efforts to bring vaccines and treatments to people in need, whether in rich or poor countries. He added that the U.S. will again provide full financial and other support for the organization. A new face mask requirement for travel in the U.S. will apply to airports and airplanes, ships, city buses, trains, and public transportation. Biden has also required masks on federal property. Travelers from overseas must provide a negative COVID-19 test before leaving for the United States and quarantine after arrival. Biden also is seeking to expand testing and vaccine availability with the goal of giving 100 million shots in his first 100 days in office. Biden has directed the Federal Emergency Management Agency to begin setting up vaccination centers. The aim is to have 100 centers open in a month. Biden is also ordering the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to begin a program to make vaccines available through local drugstores starting next month. And he is directing the Public Health Service to assist with vaccinations in some areas. There is also support for states. Biden is ordering FEMA to pay back states for the full cost of using their National Guards to set up vaccination centers. That includes the use of supplies and protective equipment, as well as workers. Some independent experts say the new administration should set a higher goal for itself than 100 million shots. Dr. Christopher Murray is with the Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation in Seattle, Washington. He said that during flu season, the country is able to vaccinate about 3 million people in a day. Given the number of people dying from COVID, we could and should do more, like what we're able to do on seasonal flu, Murray said. Biden has also set a goal of having most lower-level schools reopen in his first 100 days. He is ordering the Departments of Education and Health and Human Services to provide clear guidance for reopening schools safely. But administration officials say that reopening schools safely depends on increased testing. We do not have nearly enough testing capacity in this country, Jeff Zients said. We need the money in order to really ramp up testing, which is so important to reopen schools and businesses. Efforts to reopen the economy will depend on how quickly lawmakers act on the $1.9 trillion bill proposed by Biden. The bill includes separate measures such as $1,400 in direct payments to people and a $15 minimum wage. There is also a measure to provide aid to state and local governments. Some Republican lawmakers see the measure as unnecessary for dealing with the health crisis. The Biden plan estimates that a national vaccination plan with increased testing requires $160 billion. The new president wants another $170 billion to help in the reopening of schools and universities. The proposal also calls for major investment in scientific research to track new forms of the virus. Experts are concerned that some mutations may spread more easily and also prove harder to treat.
Today, we are going to talk about phrasal verbs. You may remember that a phrasal verb is a verb plus one or two more words, called particles. Particles can be prepositions or adverbs. There are several common particles in phrasal verbs, such as the word off. One example of a phrasal verb is go off. Phrasal verbs usually have idiomatic meanings. In other words, the verb and particle together mean something different from what each individual word suggests. The phrasal verb go off, for instance, is made of the verb go and the particle off. But go off can mean to make a sudden loud noise. The English language contains a lot of phrasal verbs. Luckily, you do not need to know all of them. Some are more common than others. On today's Everyday Grammar program, we will talk about four common phrasal verbs with the word off. They are go off, put off, drop off, and pay off. As you will learn today, some of these verbs can be separated by other words. Others cannot. Let's do a short listening exercise. Listen to this speaker talk about starting his day. Pay attention to the four phrasal verbs with off and make a mental note that some are separated by other words.
This morning, as my alarm went off, I remembered that I have a few important things to do today. It has been a busy week, but I can't put these tasks off any longer. First, I have to drop some donations off at local food banks. Then I am going to pay off my car loan. I am so excited to make the final payment.
Did you catch all four verbs? And did you notice that some were separated by other words while others were not? Good. Now let's examine meanings for each verb and talk about how to use them. Note that each of today's verbs has more than one meaning. We will focus on the meanings used in the listening exercise. The verb go off means to make a sudden loud noise. We use this meaning in relation to alarms on machines or electronics, such as an alarm clock, or a phone alarm, or fire alarm. Listen again to how our speaker used it.
This morning, as my alarm went off, I remembered that I have a few important things to do today.
Notice that the speaker used the simple past tense form of the verb go, which is went. Go off is what we call an intransitive verb. Phrasal verbs in English are either transitive or intransitive. A transitive verb needs a direct object to express a complete thought. A direct object is a person or thing that receives the action of the verb. Intransitive verbs such as go off do not have a direct object, and they are not separable. That means in sentences, we cannot separate them with other words. But transitive phrasal verbs can be separable or inseparable. That means you can put the direct object in the middle of the verb or after it. A good example of a transitive and separable phrasal verb is put off. It means to delay something or decide it will happen at a later time. Here is how our speaker used it.
It has been a busy week, but I can't put these tasks off any longer.
Can you find the direct object in the sentence? It is these tasks. Notice that this object appears in the middle of the verb. Again, with separable phrasal verbs, direct objects can appear after the verb. So how would the sentence read then? Think about it as we move to our next verb. Next up is the verb drop off. It means to take something or someone to a place and then leave. This verb is also transitive and separable. Here is how our speaker used it a moment ago.
First, I have to drop some donations off at local food banks.
Notice that the speaker separated the verb drop off by the direct object, some donations. since it is possible to put the direct object after this verb, let's hear how that would sound.
First, I have to drop off some donations at local food banks.
Both ways of using separable phrasal verbs are common and grammatically correct, and there is no change in meaning. Finally, we have the verb pay off. It means to complete payment on something that you owe, such as a bill or a loan. This verb, too, is transitive and separable. Do you remember how it was used? The speaker talked about his car loan. Here is what he said.
Then I am going to pay off my car loan. I am so excited to make the final payment.
The speaker did not separate the verb with the direct object. However, if he had put the object in the middle, how would the sentence read then? Think about it for a moment. Well, that brings us to the end of today's program. Phrasal verbs can be difficult, but often their particles provide clues to their meanings. For example, many phrasal verbs with the particle off relate to separating, completing, or ending something. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the years after World War I, new technologies changed America. Technology made it possible for millions of people to improve their lives. It also brought great changes in American society. Harry Monroe and Kay Gallant tell more about the technological and social changes that took place in the United States in the early 1920s.
Some of the most important changes came as a result of the automobile and the radio. Automobiles began to be mass-produced. They were low enough in cost, so many Americans could buy them. Gasoline was low in cost, too. Together, these developments put America on the move as never before. Automobiles made it easy for Americans to travel. Trucks made it easy for goods to be transported. Many people and businesses moved out of crowded, noisy cities. They moved to open areas outside cities, suburbs.
As automobiles helped Americans spread out, the radio helped bring them closer together. Large networks could broadcast the same radio program to many stations at the same time. Soon, Americans everywhere were listening to the same programs. They laughed at the same jokes, sang the same songs, heard the same news. Another invention that produced big changes in American life was the motion picture.
American inventor Thomas Edison began making short motion pictures at the turn of the century. In 1903, a movie called The Great Train Robbery was the first to tell a complete story. In 1915, D.W. Griffith made a long, serious movie called Birth of a Nation. By the early 1920s, many American towns had a movie theater. Most Americans went to see the movies at least once a week. The movie industry became a big business. People might not know the names of government officials, but they knew the names of every leading actor and actress.
Movies were fun. They provided a change from the day-to-day troubles of life. They also were an important social force. Young Americans tried to copy what they saw in the movies, and they dreamed about faraway places and a different kind of life. A young farm boy could imagine himself as romantic hero Douglas Fairbanks or comedian Charlie Chaplin. A young city girl could imagine herself as the beautiful and brave Mary Pickford. Rich families and poor families saw the same movies. Their children shared the same wish to be like the movie stars. In this way, the son of a banker and the son of a factory worker had much in common. The same was true for people from different parts of the country.
In the early 1920s, Americans also began reading the same publications. The publishing industry used some of the same kinds of mass production methods as the automobile industry. It began producing magazines in larger amounts. It began selling the same magazines all over the country. One of the most widely read magazines was the Saturday Evening Post. In 1902, it sold about 300,000 copies each week. 20 years later, it sold more than 2 million copies each week. Americans everywhere shared the same information and advice in such nationwide magazines. The information was not always correct, the advice was not always good, but the effect was similar to that caused by the automobile and radio. Parts of American society were becoming more alike. They were trying to move toward the same kind of life, economically and socially.
Other industries use the techniques of assembly line production to make their goods, too. They discovered that producing large numbers of goods reduced the cost of each one. One company that expanded in this way was the Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company. It was called A&P for short. The A&P was one of the first large American grocery stores to sell all kinds of food. It sold milk, meat, bread, canned fruits, and vegetables, all in the same store. Shopping at the A&P was much faster and easier than going to different stores to get different kinds of food. In 1912, A&P had 400 stores in the United States. About 10 years later, it had more than 11,000 stores. It could buy huge amounts of goods and sell each at a very low price.
Mass production also came to the clothing industry. people began wearing clothes made in factories instead of by a family member or local tailor. Before long, the same kinds of clothes could be found everywhere. Mass production removed some differences that had marked Americans in the past. Prices dropped, so people with little money could still buy nice clothes. It became more difficult to look at Americans and know by their clothes if they were rich or poor.
Social changes also resulted from great progress in medical research. Doctors and scientists reported new developments in the fight against disease. This progress gave most Americans a longer life. In 1900, for example, the average person in the United States could expect to live 49 years. By 1927, the average person could expect to live 59 years.
Life expectancy rates climbed because doctors and scientists developed effective ways to prevent or treat diseases such as tuberculosis, typhoid, diphtheria, and influenza. Yellow fever and smallpox were no longer a threat. One new medicine was insulin. It was used to treat diabetes. A man-made version gave diabetics the insulin their bodies did not have. It cut the death rate from the disease from 70% to about 1%. Doctors and scientists also learned the importance of vitamins to good health. Now they could cure several diseases caused by a lack of vitamins.
Americans in the 1920s lived much better than their fathers and mothers. A man received more pay than in the past, even though he worked fewer hours each day. He lived in a better house with new labor-saving devices. He had a car to drive to work and to take his family on holiday trips. He received a better education than his father. He and his family wore better clothes. They ate healthier foods. The average American in the 1920s had more time for sports and entertainment. He enjoyed listening to the radio and watching movies. He was more informed about national and world events.
Life was good for many Americans as World War I ended and the nation entered the 1920s, yet that life was far from perfect. Many Americans did not have the same chances to improve their lives. Black Americans continued to suffer from racism. Society continued to deny them their rights as citizens. Women did not have equal rights either. For example, they could not vote. It was during this time that the United States experienced one of its worst incidents of public hatred. Many people turned strongly against labor unions and leftists. They feared a threat to democracy. The federal government took action against what it called political extremists. Many of the charges were unfair. Many innocent lives were harmed.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.